It is Friday, March 8th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we have a preview of the new Norman Rockwell exhibition that's opening at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville this weekend. Plus, we spend some time with Tableside Theater, a new theater company that brings live performance to your dinner table. And we have our weekly conversation with Michael Tilley from the City Wire. Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers tells us what's up in entertainment this weekend and more.
But first, as Republicans warm to the idea of some kind of expansion of health care in Arkansas, there was a display of bipartisanship at the Capitol. During a rally yesterday in support of an expansion, Republican Senator Jonathan Dismang joined Democratic Governor Mike Beebe. Dismang says members of his party are keeping an open mind and are working to reach an agreement.
The only thing that I'm willing to handicap is that we're going to do our job. We're going to gather information that we need, and we're going to make an intelligent decision that is best for Arkansans, best for the future health care of this great state, and we're going to make you proud.
Republicans had generally been skeptical of a proposal to expand Medicaid, which would provide insurance to about a quarter of a million of Arkansas's working poor. But an agreement by the federal government to allow Medicaid funds to be used to purchase private insurance through an exchange has prompted many to give serious consideration to some kind of expansion.
Governor Mike Beebe says he remains concerned that Arkansas's tough new anti-abortion law will not pass a court challenge. Speaking to reporters yesterday, Beebe said limits on abortions at 12 and 20 weeks are likely unconstitutional. He also said that, as a public official, he had an obligation to do what he did.
The ones I did veto, my concern going forward is they're unconstitutional. I mean, you know, You put your hand on the Bible and you're supposed to swear to uphold the Constitution. It should mean something.
Meanwhile, Republicans say they aren't content with having enacted the most restrictive abortion law in the country and are now considering other ways of making abortions harder to get. State Senator Jason Rapert, who was behind the 12-week ban, wants to cut all public funding to Planned Parenthood. And the state's top anti-abortion advocacy group is urging lawmakers to bar providers from remotely administering the abortion pill via a video hookup.
State Senator Keith Ingram and Attorney General Dustin McDaniel are backing new legislation they say would reform the state's election and ballot initiative process. The pair discussed several new bills filed by Ingram yesterday at the Capitol. One would increase checks on absentee ballots, and another would require paid signature gatherers to register with the Secretary of State's office and make it a felony to fraudulently sign a petition for a ballot initiative. Ingram, a Democrat from West Memphis, says the bills are in response to recent absentee voter fraud as well as fraudulent signature gathering incidents leading up to last year's election.
This cuts across party lines. We have sponsors and co-sponsors that are on both sides of the aisles. I think we recognize that there is a problem, and I think that we are making a very bold statement in trying to fix it.
Though he says these bills would be improvements, McDaniel says the state's elections are currently sound.
I think that people can and should have faith in our elections right now. But I also believe that it is wise to do the very best we can to see where there are problems in any system, whether it's transportation, health care, elections, you name it. And when you find a problem, do your best to address it.
Representative Fred Love, a Democrat from Little Rock, was also on hand to promote his bill that would require criminal background checks for all candidates for public office.
Yesterday, the Northwest Arkansas Council released a study of the area's business retention and expansion efforts. The study, compiled from interviews by area chambers of commerce with 459 area companies, finds that of the businesses surveyed, they reported plans to hire 965 new employees and invest $808 million in expansions over the next 3 years. But aside from touting the region's economic strengths, it also found at least one area for improvement. Mike Harvey is the chief operating officer at the Northwest Arkansas Council.
One of our concerns out of this is, and it's more than anecdotal because about half of the respondents in the trades areas are telling us that they were having issues finding skilled workers. You know, it didn't rank very high on barriers to growth right now, but I think as you go into recovery and you start to see real growth at those industries, at that industry level, then it may present a barrier to growth, and that growth may go somewhere else.
The trade sector includes jobs where something is being made, including jobs in construction, manufacturing, and transportation. Harvey says as jobs in the trade sector are typically well-paying jobs that don't require a college degree, cities in the region should work to retain as many of those jobs as possible. We'll hear more from Mike Harvey about the Business Retention and Expansion Study on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large.
National Geographic recently placed the Buffalo National River on a list of the top 10 underappreciated parks in the United States. The designation comes as the publication released a new feature story on its travel website about the river. Park officials echoed the publication's raves about the river's natural beauty, stating that the river offers something for everyone. The Buffalo National River's place on the top 10 underappreciated parks list comes as the park has seen declining visitor numbers over the past few years. Park Public Information Officer Kevin Clark says 4 to 5 years ago, park visitations peaked at about 1.5 million visitors.
And the reduction in numbers of visitors is a consequence of a lot of things, really. There's not just a single cause. You can blame the economy and diminished dollars that people have to spend on their vacations, although it's still a pretty economical visit. But another factor that influences visitation here is the weather. And we've really suffered badly in the past couple of years from drought episodes. When we have a drought, the opportunities for people to float the river, which is the big attraction here, are greatly diminished.
He says if this year brings more rain than the last two, he would expect the number of people visiting the park to increase.
You know, we don't have an entrance fee at this park. We have a lot of opportunities for families that have been coming here for a long time. Two tanks of gas will bring people here from urban areas in Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, a lot of people down from Missouri. And it's still a real economical place to visit, a very popular place to visit. And so I would expect the numbers to go up in spite of the economy, in spite of everybody's tightening their belts.
This morning, river levels were ranked as moderate near St. Joe and Hamlet. Though farther downstream, levels near Boxley and Ponca were reported as very low.
The Razorback baseball team ended its four-game losing streak yesterday. After straight losses last week at the Coca-Cola Classic, the Diamond Hogs returned to Baum Stadium to shut out the San Diego State Aztecs 2-0. The Razorbacks return to the field this afternoon at 3:05 to continue the four-game set against the Aztecs.
Forecast tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies with overnight lows around 48 degrees. Tomorrow, a 40% chance for showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Mostly cloudy with highs near 67. Tomorrow evening, a 90% chance for showers and thunderstorms with overnight lows in the upper 40s to low 50s.
Joining me now on the phone is Michael Tilley, the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com, which covers business, politics, and much more for the entire listening area. How are you doing, sir?
So far, so good.
So far, so good. And so happy that you're going to talk to me this week as I'm filling in for Kyle.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, he the traveling man. You guys have not let him return.
He is the traveling man. We let him return for a couple of days and then send him back off out into the world to call some basketball games, but should be returning soon. And until then, you're going to tell me a little bit about, I think we're going to talk about the Arkansas legislature to start with. Lots of things happening there. Abortion's been a big topic this session.
Well, it has, and there are two pieces of one that's already passed into law. Over a BB veto, another that will be over a BB veto also. And they're both restrictive, one more so than the other. And one of the concerns among even some anti-abortion advocates was that the laws pushed too much and that, you know, they wanted to end abortion, but they wanted to do it in more of an incremental way. But these two bills are very aggressive, very popular with the anti-abortion groups, especially some of the more conservative religious elements of the Republican Party, but there's going to be some pushback, and we're already hearing from the ACLU and some other groups who say they will challenge the laws in court, which is not a surprise, but it is that is going to be a cost to the Arkansas taxpayer because they are Arkansas law, and that requires Attorney General Dustin McDaniel to defend them in court. And so depending on how far it gets pushed, you know, this could be hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxpayer costs to defend these bills, and that's one of the reasons that that's the primary reason Governor Beebe vetoed them. I mean, it wasn't necessarily that his position on abortion, was just that this isn't the smartest way to address the problem. So we'll see. The next problem, the next year or so, it will be interesting on the legal front for Attorney General Dustin McDaniel.
And earlier this week in the River Valley, you guys hosted the Arkansas Aerospace Summit.
Yes, the fifth annual Arkansas Aerospace Summit. And it's an interesting year for the group. They've formalized, have their own director now, their own interim board of directors. And Chad Causey, who was a congressional candidate in the last cycle over in East Arkansas, is now the new director. It's a Little Rock-based group, but there are roughly 180 companies, a little over 9,000 employees that are affiliated with the Arkansas aerospace industry. And it was in 2012, according to the Alliance, it topped agriculture for the value of exports, which is interesting. Agriculture has almost always been the leading exporter. But, you know, when you think about it, you know, airplanes, aircraft, equipment, the missile defense systems down in Camden, which is part of the Alliance, those are high-dollar items. It didn't take much of that production to add up. And their goal, and these are high-wage jobs, too. These are very good jobs, but, you know, they require a workforce that's competent in science, and technology, engineering, math. And so the focus of the Alliance is twofold, to some extent, is to connect Arkansas's various levels of education institutions into the workforce so they can help with training, and also make it make the Alliance and the industry more generate more awareness among business and community leaders in Arkansas. And Grant Neal, director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, spoke at their was the keynote speaker at their luncheon and had some. He's very supportive, and he talked about how Arkansas has not done enough to help, but they're changing that, and they're even changing things. You know, simple things like how to wording in our sales tax law that could impact, you know, what products are brought into Arkansas for certain phases of assembly. So it gets very technical, but the bottom line is this could be a very important industry for Arkansas. And, you know, if we could build on the energy industry and add aerospace alliance or aerospace jobs, it could do a lot to help raise Arkansas's per capita income.
You mentioned that it was surprising that it was close to agriculture, which is a big part of the state. And another big part of the state are our state parks. There's lots of state parks, and I've not made it to nearly as many as I would like. But Lake Fort Smith State Park had an announcement about some expansion there.
Yes, and you were so correct on all the parks. If I was just on the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism website a couple of days ago, and just I was somewhat embarrassed at myself for not knowing about all these interesting places that are located around the state. Need to get out more often. But to the point, yes, there are 10 new cabins at Lake Fort Smith State Park. And remember, the park had to be completely remade several years ago when the city of Fort Smith expanded Lake Fort Smith, expanded the water supply.
Mm-hmm.
So the cabins were part of the new construction, and it's a little over $2 million project. I built the 10 cabins, and it wasn't just the 10 cabins. There were also roadways and the water system, sewer system, utilities that were part of that, parking lots and that type of thing. But it's about a $2.1 million project. And the cabins were built to appear like the old WPA, it's the old WPA style.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of your listeners will remember that, but it's the old style of buildings, some of that you see maybe like a Devil's Den.
Right.
They also use some of the old stone from the old cabins that were at the first Lake Fort Smith State Park. So interesting. It's a great park. This should help And it's halfway between the Northwest Arkansas area and the Fort Smith area, so it's a great getaway for people in both markets. So it's nice to have. That's almost, and that almost marks the, I hate to say, complete return of the park when it went away. But it's a kind of the okay, we're back to full strength now at Lake Fort Smith State Park.
Well, that's promising, something to look forward to there, especially with the warmer months coming up and people wanting to be outdoors and camping and that
right.
sort of thing.
Perfect timing.
And finally, I would like to ask you a little bit about your story about the reemergence of the Cherokee language, which I found interesting.
Well, this is interesting, and kudos to our Ryan Saylor, our reporter here,
mm-hmm.
Tracked down a note that Windows 8, Microsoft, either Windows 8, was developing software that you could use the Cherokee language on Windows 8. And this is a language that's been around for a while. And, you know, roughly 200 years ago, Sequoia, the great Sequoia, you know, developed an alphabet
mm-hmm.
Based around the language. But it's been somewhat of a, I'd say, a dying language, but according to Cherokee Nation, there are really only about 3,000 people who are fluent.
Oh, wow.
To speak the language. So it was interesting that Windows decided that, you know, we're going to select this native language, this Native American language, to be included in their operating system. And, it was interesting. They had dilemmas. For example, you know, just the word folder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a common language that's used on an operating system, moving stuff to folders. Well, the Cherokee language didn't have a word for folder.
Oh.
So they had to do some workarounds on that using the Cherokee language. Because in the Cherokee language, the word for folder is really, it's a term. It essentially is putting papers in a container.
Mm-hmm.
So, in our language, words, a word can sometimes mean an entire thing, where in other languages that there's not a word for it, there's a phrase for it. So that was some of the things they had to overcome. But an interesting story, interesting that, you know, Microsoft, which obviously is a well-known global company and provides software to millions, if not billions, of people, has chosen to include Cherokee in its put the Cherokee language as a choice in its operating system language.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for talking to me today, and I hope you enjoy the rest of this nice warm weather we're having and a little bit more this weekend.
Oh, well, yes. You have a good weekend also. Thanks.
Thank you. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com, which covers politics, business, and much more for the entire listening area. Thanks again, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, I've brought in Bob McInerney, Dan and Terry Hine, and The Music Machine. Played quite a few tracks here in the KOF studios. And Dan also reminisces about his time with the Fabulous Flippers. That's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
If you're familiar with Norman Rockwell's work, you're probably most familiar with the covers he created for the Saturday Evening Post. If you don't remember them from their original publication, perhaps you've seen pictures of them in books or reproductions of them hanging throughout your great aunt's house. Because you've become accustomed to viewing the covers that were typically about 12 to 14 inches tall, you may be startled when you visit the new Norman Rockwell exhibition at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art and find a number of large oil paintings hanging on the walls. The traveling exhibition, titled American Chronicles: The Art of Norman Rockwell, opens to the public tomorrow. Yesterday morning, Lori Norton Moffitt, director and CEO of the Norman Rockwell Museum, attended a media preview at Crystal Bridges to discuss some of the pieces in the traveling exhibition.
We're looking at paintings here in this exhibition that are 3, 4, 5 feet tall, sometimes 6 feet long. They're almost life-size, so that when we stand at eye level with these pictures, we're almost stepping into the frame and into a room with the figures in the paintings. They're filled with people, conversations and stories going on. So it was really almost impossible for people to understand the artistry and the high quality of painting that went into producing a magazine cover, which was photomechanically reproduced on the cover of a magazine in order to print millions of copies to be, you know, mailed or sold in the newsstand and distributed. So I think that's one of the startling and absolute pleasures when people arrive and they see how large Norman Rockwell painted. It's just breathtaking.
Lori explains that when you shrink such large paintings to the size of a magazine cover, the color gets very dense and rich and all of the details are in hyperfocus. She explains this is what makes Rockwell's paintings look so lifelike. Lori has been the director of the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts for 25 years, and before that, she spent time as the institution's curator. She is a leading Rockwell scholar and produced the catalog Resume of Rockwell's Art, which for the first time tried to catalog everything he had done. Lori explains he was a prolific artist who painted more than 4,000 images during a 65-year period. In addition to 50 original paintings, this exhibition also features all 323 Saturday evening post covers created by Rockwell.
During the years that he worked, the profession of being an illustrator was highly regarded and sought after, and the magazines hired hundreds of artists to produce covers. The Post was a weekly magazine, and on average, Norman Rockwell painted one image a month. There was approximately one Rockwell cover a month on the cover of the Post. So the other three that month were painted by other artists. And these artists typically worked for hire by the Post or later Look magazine. When Norman Rockwell went to work for Look magazine, they had a very different editorial point of view from the Post. The Post was a fairly conservative journal, and the Look magazine was looking at current events of the time. It was the 1960s, and the nation was in tumult. We had not only the civil rights movement going on, but we had Vietnam, we had the space engagement, flying to the moon and landing on the moon. It was an exciting and vibrant and also time filled with a lot of upheaval. So the work that Norman Rockwell painted during that decade tended to dwell on current events, be focused on social justice, the war on poverty, race relations, equity and intolerance across a wide range of social topics, and you'll see that represented in his artwork here from that period.
Murder in Mississippi, for example, is an illustration Rockwell created for Look magazine about the 1964 murder of three young civil rights workers. The magazine eventually chose to use a preliminary sketch for publication rather than the final painting. The original unpublished painting, as well as the oil sketch used for publication, are both included in this exhibition. This exhibition also includes several well-known images, such as Triple Self-Portrait and Girl at Mirror. Lori says what fascinates her about Rockwell's work is the engagement people have with it.
I never tire of seeing how moved people are when they experience a Norman Rockwell work, which is why we like to share this collection from his museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, with the nation. And it covers such a fascinating period of our nation's history as well. The images range from the impact of electric lighting and the first telephone in the house, to replace candlelights and lanterns to read in the evening, to right on up to landing on the moon with all forms of transportation in between, automobile, train, plane, rocket ships, computers, television. It's a fascinating period of 20th century America and American life.
The exhibition also includes some of the artist's preliminary sketches, color studies, and detailed drawings. Also included are several posed and costumed photographs Rockwell staged as references for the figures in his paintings. He often used himself and family members as models. One of Rockwell's former models, Anne Morgan, was on hand at yesterday's media preview.
He and my parents were very close friends. I grew up in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and my father, who was an opera singer, was traveling a good deal, but my parents got to be very good friends with the Rockwells. And he painted many, many children in Stockbridge. I certainly wasn't the only one. But if you had red hair and freckles and big eyes, that was an advantage, apparently.
Anne says she modeled for three works, a charcoal illustration for Massachusetts Mutual Insurance, a 1956 Crest toothpaste ad, and a 1957 Saturday Evening Post cover. While sitting for a long period of time could seem boring for a child, she says Rockwell made it entertaining.
Well, he started by taking photographs, which made it less complicated and less tiring. And then you would go back and sit for an hour one week, and you would go back the next week and sit for another hour. But he always felt that he kept you entertained and fed. There were always snacks and things to eat, and he was a very sweet and amusing man, and it was just a lot of fun.
Ann now serves as the president of the Norman Rockwell Museum's Board of Trustees and is pleased to still be a part of Rockwell's work as an adult.
Nobody knew at the time, at least certainly when we were children. He was a neighbor. He was seen frequently around town. Everybody knew him. He was a personable man, and he was just a neighbor. And I don't think any of us at the time really recognized how significant he would become as a national artist and how important it would be to have been part of his life. So it's a great privilege for me to come back and be part of the museum to promote his work and the history that goes with it.
While Rockwell's work can evoke a bit of nostalgia for those who grew up seeing his illustrations on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post, Lori Norton Moffitt, director and CEO of the Norman Rockwell Museum, says his work can still be appealing to younger generations.
I think now we look back, and these are historic pictures. They're from another century. They're from earlier decades, and generations today growing up didn't grow up with Norman Rockwell, but we find they're still fascinated with his work. Families bring their young children. They want them introduced to the ideas and the ideals in Rockwell's work. And I think there's something not only very American in this art, but very human. And for me, it's his humanitarian point of view, his belief in decency and kindness and tolerance and equality for all and just goodness and this sense of relentless optimism that is present in these paintings, of course, is a very American ideal. And so people recognize themselves. It doesn't matter if you're from another nation and a new immigrant into our nation or visiting from another country. These are human stories, and I think we have a love of storytelling as people, and each one of these pictures tells a story.
American Chronicles, The Art of Norman Rockwell, opens to the public tomorrow and will be on view through May 27th at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Timed, reserved tickets are required to view the traveling exhibition. Tickets are complimentary for members and $12 for non-members. Youth admission is free. More information is available at crystalbridges.org.
This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, March 8th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And joining us now is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Oh, it's just warm enough. I have spring fever.
I totally have spring fever.
And so we're going to devote what we talk about today to the kids who must have it worse than we do.
With spring break right around the corner.
Oh, I know. I'm like, what do kids have to do with spring?
Spring break.
Okay. And wanting out of school. So this weekend, if you like dogs, see, there's another segue that doesn't make any sense, but it will. There will be dogs all over the stage at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale.
Go, dog, go.
Exactly. Well, they won't be real dogs.
No, of course not.
They'll be costumed people playing dogs. I'm really interested in seeing this because there's only about 75 words in the book that this comes from.
I remember it as a children's book, and it's been a long time since I've read it, but it was very simple, and I remember being short, but I do remember the illustrations with the brightly colored.
There are a lot of colors,
A lot of colors, and the dogs, and cars, and dogs with hats and things.
And dogs at work, and they've recreated all of that with actors and costumes, and it is adorable. Danny Hobson is directing the Child's Play production, and he promises that what it doesn't have in words, it makes up for in action and fun, and it'd be a perfect play for little kids, for beginning playgoers.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a good way to get them started. Started with all the bright colors and the fun costumes.
And they do basic words up, down, in, out, over, under. Mm-hmm. So really basic kids reading translated to the stage. There's 11 actors ranging in age from 10 to 70.
Oh, wow.
Playing 7 main dogs and 4 more ensemble dogs.
I like it.
And a live pianist, also costumed as a dog. This is happening at 3 o'clock tomorrow and 3 o'clock Sunday at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. And tickets are $9 to $16 for non-members at 751-5441. Also this weekend at Arts Life Theater in Fayetteville, Miss Nelson is missing.
Still that missing. Continues.
Still missing. 7 o'clock today, 2 and 7 Saturday, and 2 on Sunday. Tickets are $6 to $8. Storytime at Hobbs State Park on Saturday. Mother Nature reads in costume. The topic is hiding in plain sight.
Have you ever made it to one of these? It sounds like a good
no,
time for the little
but the
ones.
The costumes look so fun because Mother Nature
seen
is
them,
all
but
dressed up and surrounded by nature things. And
so, sounds like a fabulous idea.
Is she actually reading from something?
Yes.
Because when I hear hiding in plain sight, I did a bug story a couple months ago about wintering, what insects do, and
right,
there are a lot of things right in front of me that I didn't realize were there. So,
and
you
that's
know
some of the activities that
mm-hmm
go along
okay
with it.
Okay.
So that starts at 10:30 on Saturday. It's free. Dragon Howl Story Time. Also on Saturday at 10:30 at the Fayetteville Public Library with Philip and Vanessa Rouse, who are the author and illustrator of a book called Dragon Howl.
Okay.
The Celebrate Art Showcase reception is on Saturday from 1 to 3 at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. 300 art pieces by kindergartners through 8th graders from Madison, Carroll, Benton, and Washington counties. They are always adorable.
The kids or the paintings?
Both. And Dr. Seuss Storytime on Sunday, The Lorax at Hobbs State Park,
which,
1 o'clock on Sunday.
Didn't he just have a birthday?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think he was 312, but don't quote me on that. Now, if you're looking ahead for spring break, there's a ton of fun stuff for spring break, and we'll have it. We had it all in print today. We'll have it all in print again next Friday in What's Up.
Can I just say that I cannot believe it's already time for spring break? I feel like I can say this to you, Becca, because
you know how much we are pained by the passing of time.
We are. I just have to point that out, that you saying spring break makes me itch a little bit.
Yeah, but it also makes me want to go.
Well, of course.
Want to go.
That's one of the worst things about the job is looking forward to
everything.
Yeah,
because we're always planning ahead
and,
and all
so
of the events.
Fast.
And it just, it's
right
here. Yeah, I, but
yeah.
Okay, breathe.
It starts the 18th.
Okay. Go tell me what we can do, or what kids can do around here for their spring
break.
Well,
we can sneak into a lot of it.
Of course.
Bella Vista Library has a Make It and Take It Crafts Day on the 23rd. Trike Theater has a week-long spring break young company in Bentonville. They will do their own play, lines, choreography, sets, costumes. You can find out more about that at 866-331-3681 or Trike Theater, that would be re.org. Crystal Bridges Museum has a ton of free stuff. They have nature drawing. They have drop-in drawing. They have family films introducing children to art. They have family-friendly gallery tours. They have drop-in puppetry with Trike Theater. You can check that all out on their website, which is crystalbridges.org.
Which I'm continuing with the How Fast Time Flies. I went to Crystal Bridges for the first time last spring break.
Oh.
And it does not feel like it was a year ago at all.
Time does fly.
Yeah.
The Jones Center has a $3 spring break, meaning you can swim, skate, or both for $3 every day of spring break.
I like the or both.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
Mm-hmm.
Shiloh Museum, of course, has some great exhibits that would be great for kids. Archaeopteryx to Zappos. See, I got to say it again.
You did.
Which is on the history of the University of Arkansas Museum and has cool fossils and Kachina dolls and all sorts of things kids would be fascinated by. Springdale Public Library is doing movie breaks on the 18th and the 20th. Arts Live in Fayetteville has 2 spring break camps, Create a Play for students 5 through 8 and Spring Musical Theater for students 9 to 12. The Community Creative Center in Fayetteville has Kinder Music, Tell Me a Tale for ages 4 to 7, glass fusion classes for kids and a glass fusion class for adults. And the Fayetteville Public Library has daytime lock-ins, an artsy craftsy day for families, and spring break movies, including one of my favorites, Hotel Transylvania.
Hmm.
Peter Pan, Wreck-It Ralph, The Rescuers, and Rise of the Guardians. And you can find out more about all of this in What's Up. Oh, and don't forget, Ozark Folkways in Winslow has a juggling workshop for children 8 to 18. That's
seriously
on March 19th.
That sounds
there's
like
a story
fun. That sounds like fun.
A lot of things to do.
Have fun while we're at work.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsburg, your host for Shades of Jazz, every Friday and Saturday evening, beginning at 10 p.m. On this Friday's show, I will pay tribute to one of the great jazz organists of our time who passed away this week, Melvin Rhine. We'll hear cuts from Melvin Rhine on the Hammond B3 organ with Wes Montgomery, and also cuts from his CDs as a leader. I will also feature an exclusive interview with jazz harmonica player Gregoire Marais, who will be appearing at the Walton Arts Center in concert on March 16th. This, in addition to music from Benny Green, Jason Marsalis, Kevin Eubanks, and much more. That's Shades of Jazz, Friday at 10 p.m.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, presents its Masterworks 3 concert tomorrow at 7:30 at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. SONA musicians will perform Verdi's Requiem, featuring guest local soloists, the SONA Singers, and regional choirs. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
The University of Arkansas Scala Cantorum, the university's premier choral ensemble under the direction of Dr. Stephen Caldwell, presents its spring concert tour, Flowers in Springtime, this evening at 7:30 at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall in Fayetteville, tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the First United Methodist Church of Bentonville, and Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Cathedral of St. Andrew in Little Rock. Music will include Morten Lauridsen's famous Songs of the Rose and works by Eric Whitaker, Gerald Finzi, and William Billings. The concerts are open to the public and free.
In honor of Women's History Month, there will be two showings of the movie Iron-Jawed Angels tomorrow at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale. Showings are free and open to the public. Movie times are 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Iron-Jawed Angels is a true story about the American women's suffrage movement during the early 1900s. For more information, 479-601-1443.
The Freedom Movement is a movement across college campuses to raise awareness and funds to help stop human trafficking. This year, the organization will hold a community 5K tomorrow called Run for Rescue. Money raised will go to Tiny Hands International, an organization that rescues girls in India and Nepal out of sex trafficking and helps them make their way back into society. You can sign up to run or just donate at fayrunforrescue.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
About 6 months ago, Pam Marks started Tableside Theater, a new theater company of writers, actors, and directors that bring live theater to restaurants and events. With a name like Tableside Theater, it only seems fitting that company members begin rehearsals with a home-cooked meal.
Good.
Are you done with your plate,
Hopi? Yes, I am.
A handful of actors are perched on bar stools in the kitchen and are chatting away as Tableside Theater owner and creator Pam Marks offers her house guests food and drink. Hot dogs are on tonight's menu. In addition to the 3 cats, 9 chickens, 2 dogs, 4 kids, and 1 husband that make up her household, Pam has opened up her 2-story Bentonville home to about a dozen actors for this evening's rehearsal of not one, but 2 plays.
I like to feed dinner to the cast because they're coming from work, usually, sometimes school, sometimes the community college, and it's just something that I like to do for people. I like to feed them a nice dinner, and it's a nice, it's just a very nice, relaxing atmosphere, good dinner, and then we get to work on the show, and it goes along with the name Tableside Theater, and I'd like to, at some point, I'd love for Tableside Theater to be part of, bringing awareness to maybe people in our community who don't enjoy a hot meal every night. I think Tableside Theater would really lend itself to to that kind of maybe a fundraiser or something like that. So I guess it's just kind of in my nature. It's just, you know, I like to nurture people. I like to take care of people. And so it's fun, you know, a good time, a good meal, and good friends.
Pam has been involved in community theater for more than two decades. After directing a couple of murder mysteries with the Village Players, she said she had such a good time that she decided to start her own company. So far, the group has performed a variety of works, including some original pieces created by local writers, in different venues across Northwest Arkansas. Pam says it's surprising what you can do with a small space and some creativity.
We make every effort to make it work, and we've so far it's all worked out. We've had tiny little stages, and we've used the whole restaurant. We've run out into the audience and had a fight out in the audience, and you never know what's going to happen. You just kind of have to be up for anything, which is, I mean, that's the nature of the game in theater anyway. But this is a little more, because we don't have that 20-foot rule. We have one of my friends likes to call it theater in your face. But it's a lot of fun. It's entertaining, and it's you don't always know what to expect, but it's all worked out really well so far.
Actors participating in the shows often face a number of challenges. The first is blocking. Because their performance space is a restaurant as opposed to a traditional theater, it's not unusual for the actors to have to wait until the day of the show to really see the space and decide where they will be able to move during the performance. Another challenge is the quick turnaround from casting to showtime.
You'll get your script, and then within a week or two, we start rehearsals, and we only rehearse for a couple of weeks, and then we do 1 to 2 weekends of shows, depending on the demand for that show. And then a lot of times we'll come back. You may do a show, and then, you know, a few months later, we may decide to pick that show up for a particular event or another venue where that show works. So it's a lot of fun, and sometimes the same show has some different lines and some different aspects to it in different locations. There's a little bit of an improv aspect to this. When we get together, we really kind of open it up for the actress to kind of come up with, you know, some ideas. And sometimes they come up with ideas as we're performing, because when people are sitting 2 feet away from you, you just may be inspired by them. So,
one of the shows the group will be performing again this weekend is Laundry and Bourbon by James McClure. Pam describes the one-act comedy as a show that's a whole lot of comedy with a little bit of drama. She says the play follows three women sitting on a back porch drinking bourbon and coke while talking about men, life, children, and bridge.
Bridge is on the way out.
Oh, God!
There's a new game.
Is it hard?
It's an oriental.
Is it harder than bridge?
What's the name of it?
It's just going to be all the rage.
What's its name?
I just got through learning how to play bridge.
Patty, hush up. What's its name, Amy?
Mahjong.
Mahjong?
Mahjong. I heard of that game.
Well, I haven't.
Pam will once again perform this play with Hope Holmes. Rounding out the three-person show is Amber Brown, who is new to Tableside Theater. Hope says as an actor, there are a number of things she finds attractive about this unique style of performance.
The fact that you're in amongst friends right here doing it in the house, that's all laid back and everything, that's very comfortable. Just I guess just the style of show that you're doing as well, because I mean it wouldn't be the same if we were doing some big musical number, you
right,
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just the type of shows that we're doing, being able to take them to different restaurants, and people are just really wanting to see these, you know, this type of thing where you go to a place to have dinner and have a show rather than going to a theater type of thing, type setting. So it's that's neat, you know, that's different, and it feels different. I don't know, what do you think?
It's spontaneous.
Yeah.
It feels more spontaneous.
I don't know. It is a lot freer.
Amber adds that an appealing aspect of these shows to audience members is that the performances are in a more intimate setting than a traditional theater.
It's a small venue, so you're not sitting at the back of the theater straining to hear. You're in a little, you know, you're in a little spot, and it feels like you're sitting in on a conversation. It feels like you're sitting in on it.
Mm-hmm. They get to be part of it, because when we chase each other around, we chase each other around the patrons. So, yeah.
And you know, I mean, everybody's a little bit of a voyeur. Everybody likes to eavesdrop a little bit. It feels a little bit like that, I think, more so than it feels like a stage setting. It feels like you're, you know.
Yeah, they're right there amongst. I mean, they're within reaching distance. So, you know, they get to feel like they're a part of it.
Owner and creator Pam Marks notes that while audience members may get incorporated into shows in unexpected ways, they'll never be asked to stand up and improvise with the actors. If you miss out on Laundry and Bourbon this weekend, you'll have a chance to catch the group performing another show next weekend called Eat, Drink, and Be Murdered. The Tony Liu Productions play follows two warring families, the O'Reillys and the McFaddens, who are fighting over the secret recipe to a whiskey empire.
Those two at it again?
Yeah, the never-ending story. They're the only two family members that don't drink. No wonder they're so crabby.
Look, you can't really blame Anna. Rose has been treating her like dirt since they were kids.
Big deal. Rose treats everybody like dirt.
You ought to see her in action down.
Mark Beasley will make his tableside theater debut in this play. Mark has been involved in acting in the area for some time and says he recently reconnected with Pam, whom he met years ago. During his short tenure with the troupe, he seems to already feel right at home.
When we have rehearsals here, it's like a real family setting, and she'll feed everyone, and it's like this ensemble cast, and so it really helps the process as actors to have that feeling. And then by the time you get on stage and are rehearsing, you know, we're two families, and we feel like two families because of that.
Owner and creator Pam Marks has even been able to incorporate her own family into her new business.
Overall, if I put pen to paper, it's not a big moneymaker, but it's something that I love to do, and I can do it around being a mother of four kids. And my girls, my two older girls have been in some of the shows. So my husband does the graphic work for me, and he does my website. So it's really kind of a family event, and it's just a lot of fun. So it's hard to find a job when you have four kids that you can do around being a mom. And I want to be there for their shows, for their plays and their choir concerts and their forensics tournaments and their orchestra concerts and all of that stuff. So this allows me to do something I love and make a part-time income, but also, you know, put being a mom to the four kids first.
Tableside Theater will perform Laundry and Bourbon today and tomorrow at Flapsdown Grill in Springdale. And Eat, Drink, and Be Murdered March 10th and 17th at Acoustic Mud in Bella Vista and March 15th and 16th at Tavola Trattoria in Bentonville. More information is available at tablesidetheater.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Paul Kelso is the local host of the Generic Blues Show, which can be heard every Friday night at 9 here on KUAF. Recently, he invited Dan and Terry Hine and Bob McInerney into the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Bob fronted bands like the Tyrones, the Boomers, and 40-something. Dan used to perform with the Fabulous Flippers, a band that is legendary for their fun concerts, and they've been inducted into five different states' Music Hall of Fames. They were among the first rock and roll bands in the Southwest to play R&B with horns, and are considered an inspiration for bands like Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears. During the musicians' visit to KUAF, they performed this song. It's titled, Let's Have Some Fun.
Hello, everybody. Danny Hine and the Blues Review. With Little Miss Terry and Bobby Mack. Gonna do a little thing by Bobby Bland. Goes like this. Hey, Betty, baby, what you doing tonight? There's a party going on and it's just about right. Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
We're gonna party all night. Honey, just me and you. I knew you were coming out of baked cake. Since you're already here, shake, baby, shake. Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
We're gonna party all night. Honey, just me and you. We'll roast a pig. We'll cook him in the ground. Daylight comes, we'll still be getting down. Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
We're some fun.
Let's have 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 some fun.
We're gonna party all night. We're gonna party all night. We're gonna party all night. Honey, just me and you. Have some fun.
That song is titled Let's Have Some Fun, and it was performed by Dan and Terry Hine and Bob McInerney inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. You can hear more from their visit tonight at 9 on the Generic Blues Show with your local host, Paul Kelso.
A listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Rock.
Where's Rock?
It's in Madison County, but just barely. It's right on the border of Benton and Madison County, kind of northwest of Clifty.
I like it. So. All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. If you tune in at 9 Sunday morning for another edition of Ozarks at Large.
Right. You'll be joining me for Weekend Ozarks.
You will. And before we go, a couple quick notes. Congratulations to a couple of basketball teams in the area. 7A State Basketball Championship is this weekend. In the girls' game, it's Fort Smith. It's Northside versus Southside. It's a little bit of rivalry there.
Quite the rivalry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then for the boys, Fayetteville High School will be playing North Little Rock. And you can catch those games online, actually, if you can't make it, at fearlessfriday.com. Also, another event tomorrow at Smoke and Barrel in Fayetteville. There is a fundraiser so they can upgrade the sound system.
Right. They're calling it a sound raiser.
Yes.
Which is kind of cute.
I think the charge is kind of being led by Dan Arkansan, a local band. And let's see, things start around 6.
It looks like the first band begins at 6:15, and that band is Hombros Rancheros Nick Shoulders.
Excellent. And some of the other bands playing Basement Brew, Thunder Lizards, Family History, The Great Scots, Teenagers, and of course, Dan Arkansan. Admission is about $5. Now, the great thing about Smoke and Barrel, these are mostly local bands, and you can hear local bands, but they also have touring bands come through. Late last month, I think February 20th, they had a Brooklyn-based band called Killer Bob, and Katie Henriksen got to speak to them on the phone. And while they were here, she actually got to talk to them inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and they played a little bit of music. They have backgrounds in jazz and punk. They all went to the New School in New York, but they kind of have this experimental music that they play.
It's very different from what we normally hear in the performance studio.
It is.
So it was a fun afternoon.
It was, and so we thought we'd play a little bit of that, too, in today's show. So thanks again for listening, and have a great weekend.
Yes.